Augmenting Human Intellect, A Conceptual Framework, by Douglas Engelbart, October 1962. Section 3, Examples and Discussion. The conceptual structure which we have evolved to orient and guide the pursuit of increasing man's intellectual effectiveness has been described in the foregoing sections in a rather general and abstract fashion. In this section, we shall try to develop more concrete images of these concepts, of some of the future possibilities for augmentation, and of the relationship between these different concepts and possibilities. It must be borne in mind that a great deal of study and invention is yet to be done in developing the improved augmentation means that are bound to come, and that the examples which we present in this report are intended only to show what is meant by the generalizations which we use, and to provide a feeling on the part of the reader for the richness and power of the improvements we can likely develop in our augmentation means. Many of the examples are realizable today. In fact, some have been realized. And most of the rest are reasonably straightforward extrapolations into the near future. We predict that what actually develops in the new augmentation means will be consistent with our conceptual framework, but that the particulars will be full of surprises. Each of the examples will show a facet of how the little steps that the human can take with his sensory mental motor apparatus can be organized cooperatively with the capabilities of artifacts to accomplish significant things in the way of achieving comprehension and solving problems. This organization, as we have shown in Section 2, can be viewed as the five different types of structuring which we outlined, where much of the structuring that goes on in the human's total problem-solving activity is for the purpose of building a mental structure, which in a way puts the human up where he can see what is going on and can point the direction to move next. An early paper offering suggestions toward augmenting the human intellect that fits well and significantly within the framework which we have developed was written by Vannevar Bush in 1945. Indeed, it fits so well and states its points so nicely that it was deemed appropriate to our purpose here to summarize it in detail and to quote from it at considerable length. What Vannevar Bush proposed in 1945. He wrote as World War II was coming to an end, and his principal purpose seemed to be to offer new professional objectives to those scientists who were soon to be freed from war-motivated research and development. It would seem that he also wished to induce a general recognition of a growing problem: storage, retrieval, and manipulation of information for and by intellectual workers, and to show the possibilities he foresaw for scientific development of equipment which could significantly aid such workers in facing this problem. He summarized the situation, quote, "There is a growing mountain of research. The investigator is staggered by the findings and conclusions of thousands of other workers. Professionally, our methods of transmitting and reviewing the results of research are generations old. Truly significant attainments become lost in the mass of the inconsequential. The summation of human experience is being expanded at a prodigious rate, and the means we use for threading through the consequent maze to the momentarily important item is the same as was used in the days of square-rigged ships." End quote. Then he brought out some general considerations for hope. Quote, "But there are signs of a change as new and powerful instrumentalities come into use. Photocells, advanced photography, thermionic tubes, cathode ray tubes, relay combinations. There are plenty of mechanical aids with which to effect a transformation in scientific records." End quote. And he points out that devices which we commonly use today, for example, a calculating machine or an automobile, would have been impossibly expensive to produce in earlier eras of our technological development. Quote, The world has arrived at an age of cheap, complex devices of great reliability, and something is bound to come of it. End quote. In 6.5 pages, crammed full of well-based speculations, Bush proceeds to outline enough plausible artifact and methodology developments to make a very convincing case for the augmentation of the individual intellectual worker. Extension of existing photographic techniques to give each individual a continuously available miniature camera for recording anything in view and of interest, and to realize a high-quality 100-to-1 linear reduction ratio for micro-record files for these photographs and published material. Voice recognition equipment, perhaps requiring a special language, to ease the process of entering new self-generated material into the written record. These are to provide the individual with information-generating aid. For the detailed manipulation of mathematical and logical expressions, Bush projects computing aids, which have been surpassed by subsequent development, that allow the individual to exercise a greater proportion of his time and talents in the tasks of selecting data and the appropriate transformations and processes which are to be executed, leaving to the machinery the subsequent execution. He suggests that new notation for our verbal symbols, perhaps binary, could allow character recognition devices to help even further in the information manipulation area, and also points out that poor symbolism, quote, the exceedingly crude way in which mathematicians express their relationships, they employ a symbolism which grew like Topsy and has little consistency, a strange fact in that most logical field, end quote, stands in the way of full realization of machine help for the manipulations associated with the human's real-time process of mathematical work. And, quote, then, on beyond the strict logic of the mathematician, lies the application of logic in everyday affairs. We may someday click off arguments on a machine with the same assurance that we now enter sales on a cash register. End quote. Then, quote, so much for the manipulation of ideas and their insertion into the record. Thus far, we seem to be worse off than before, for we can enormously extend the record. Yet even in its present bulk, we can hardly consult it. This is a much larger matter than merely the extraction of data for the purposes of scientific research. It involves the entire process by which man profits by his inheritance of acquired knowledge. The prime action of use is selection, and here we are halting indeed. There may be millions of fine thoughts, and the account of the experience on which they are based, all encased within stone walls of acceptable architectural form. But if the scholar can get it only one a week by diligent search, his syntheses are not likely to keep up with the current scene. End quote. He goes on to discuss possible developments that could allow very rapid, in the human's time frame, selection of unit records from a very large file, where the records could be dry process photographic micro images upon which the user could add information at will. Bush goes on to say, quote, the real heart of the matter of selection, however, goes deeper than a lag in the adoption of mechanisms. Our ineptitude in getting at the record is largely caused by the artificiality of systems of indexing. End quote. He observes the power of the associative recall which human memory exhibits, and proposes that a mechanization of selection by association could be realized to considerable advantage. He spends the last two pages, a quarter of his article, describing a device embodying this capability, and points out some features of its use and of its likely effect. This material is so relevant and so well put, I quote it in its entirety. Consider a future device for individual use, which is a sort of mechanized private file and library. It needs a name, and to coin one at random, Memex will do. A Memex is a device in which an individual stores all his books, records, and communications, and which is mechanized so that it may be consulted with exceeding speed and flexibility. It is an enlarged, intimate supplement to his memory. It consists of a desk, and while it can presumably be operated from a distance, it is primarily the piece of furniture at which he works. On the top are slanting, translucent screens on which material can be projected for convenient reading. There is a keyboard and sets of buttons and levers. Otherwise, it looks like an ordinary desk. In one end is the stored material. The matter of bulk is well taken care of by improved microfilm. Only a small part of the interior of the Memex is devoted to storage, the rest to mechanism. Yet if the user inserted 5,000 pages of material a day, it would take him hundreds of years to fill the repository. So he can be profligate and enter material freely. Most of the Memex contents are purchased on microfilm, ready for insertion. Books of all sorts, pictures, current periodicals, newspapers, are thus obtained and dropped into place. Business correspondence takes the same path, and there is provision for direct entry. On the top of the Memex is a transparent platen. On this are placed longhand notes, photographs, memoranda, all sorts of things. When one is in place, the depression of a lever causes it to be photographed onto the next blank space in a section of the Memex film, dry photography being employed. There is, of course, provision for consultation of the record by the usual scheme of indexing. If the user wishes to consult a certain book, he taps its code on the keyboard, and the title page of the book promptly appears before him, projected onto one of his viewing positions. Frequently used codes are mnemonic, so that he seldom consults his code book, but when he does, a single tap of a key projects it for his use. Moreover, he has supplemental levers. On deflecting one of these levers to the right, he runs through the book before him, each page in turn being projected at a speed which just allows a recognizing glance at each. If he deflects it further to the right, he steps through the book 10 pages at a time, still further at 100 pages at a time. Deflection to the left gives him the same control backwards. A special button transfers him immediately to the first page of the index. Any given book of his library can thus be called up and consulted with far greater facility than if it were taken from a shelf. As he has several projection positions, he can leave one item in position while he calls up another. He can add marginal notes and comments, taking advantage of one possible type of dry photography. And it could even be arranged so that he could do this by a stylus scheme, such as is now employed in the telautograph seen in railroad waiting rooms, just as though he had the physical page before him. All this is conventional, except for the projection forward of present-day mechanisms and gadgetry. It affords an immediate step, however, to associative indexing, the basic idea of which is a provision whereby any item may be caused at will to select immediately and automatically another. This is the essential feature of the Memex. The process of tying two items together is the important thing. When the user is building a trail, he names it, inserts the name in his codebook, and taps it out on his keyboard. Before him are the two items to be joined, projected onto adjacent viewing positions. At the bottom of each, there are a number of blank code spaces, and a pointer is set to indicate one of these on each item. The user taps a single key, and the items are permanently joined. In each code space appears the code word. Out of view, but also in the code space, is inserted a series of dots for photocell viewing, and on each item, These dots, by their positions, designate the index number of the other item. Thereafter, at any time when one of these items is in view, the other can be instantly recalled merely by tapping a button below the corresponding code space. Moreover, when numerous items have been thus joined together to form a trail, they can be reviewed in turn, rapidly or slowly, by deflecting a lever like that used for turning the pages of a book. It is exactly as though the physical items had been gathered together to form a new book. It is more than this, for any item can be joined into numerous trails. The owner of the Memex, let us say, is interested in the origin and properties of the bow and arrow. Specifically, he is studying why the short Turkish bow was apparently superior to the English longbow in the skirmishes of the Crusades. He has dozens of possibly pertinent books and articles in his Memex. First, he runs through an encyclopedia, finds an interesting but sketchy article, leaves it projected. Next, in a history, he finds another pertinent item and ties the two together. Thus he goes, building a trail of many items. Occasionally, he inserts a comment of his own, either linking it into the main trail or joining it by a side trail to a particular item. When it becomes evident that the elastic properties of available materials had a great deal to do with the bow, he branches off on a side trail, which takes him through textbooks on elasticity and tables of physical constants. He inserts a page of longhand analysis of his own. Thus he builds a trail of his interest through the maze of materials available to him. And the trails do not fade. Several years later, his talk with a friend turns to the queer ways in which a people resist innovations, even of vital interest. He has an example in the fact that the outraged Europeans still failed to adopt the Turkish bow. In fact, he has a trail on it. A touch brings up the code book. Tapping a few keys projects the head of the trail. A lever runs through it at will, stopping at interesting items, going off on side excursions. It is an interesting trail, pertinent to the discussion. So, he sets a reproducer in action, photographs the whole trail out, and passes it to his friend for insertion in his own Memex, there to be linked into the more general trail. Wholly new forms of encyclopedias will appear, ready-made, with a mesh of associative trails running through them, ready to be dropped into the Memex and there amplified. The lawyer has at his touch the associated opinions and decisions of his whole experience and of the experience of friends and authorities. The patent attorney has on call the millions of issued patents with familiar trails to every point of his client's interest. The physician, puzzled by his patient's reactions, strikes the trail established in studying an earlier, similar case and runs rapidly through analogous case histories with side references to the classics for the pertinent anatomy and histology. The chemist, struggling with the synthesis of an organic compound, has all the chemical literature before him in his laboratory, with trails following the analogies of compounds and side trails to their physical and chemical behavior. The historian, with a vast chronological account of a people, parallels it with a skip trail, which stops only at the salient items and can follow at any time contemporary trails which lead him all over civilization at a particular epoch. There is a new profession of trail blazers, those who find delight in the task of establishing useful trails through the enormous mass of the common record. The inheritance from the master becomes not only his additions to the world's record, but for his disciples, the entire scaffolding by which they were erected. Thus, science may implement the ways in which man produces, stores, and consults the record of the race. It might be striking to outline the instrumentalities of the future more spectacularly, rather than to stick closely to the methods and elements now known and undergoing rapid development, as has been done here. Technical difficulties of all sorts have been ignored, certainly, but also ignored are means as yet unknown, which may come any day to accelerate technical progress as violently as did the advent of the thermionic tube. In order that the picture may not be too commonplace, by reason of sticking to present-day patterns, it may be well to mention one such possibility, not to prophesy, but merely to suggest, for prophecy based on extension of the known has substance, while prophecy founded on the unknown is only a doubly involved guess. All our steps in creating or absorbing material of the record proceed through one of the senses, the tactile when we touch keys, the oral when we speak or listen, the visual when we read. Is it not possible that someday the path may be established more directly? We know that when the eye sees, all the consequent information is transmitted to the brain by means of electrical vibrations in the channel of the optic nerve. This is an exact analogy with the electrical vibrations which occur in the cable of a television set. They convey the picture from the photocells, which see it, to the radio transmitter from which it is broadcast. We know further that if we can approach that cable with the proper instruments, we do not need to touch it. We can pick up those vibrations by electrical induction and thus discover and reproduce the scene which is being transmitted, just as a telephone wire may be tapped for its message. The impulses which flow in the arm nerves of a typist convey to her fingers the translated information which reaches her eye or ear, in order that the fingers may be caused to strike the proper keys. Might not these currents be intercepted, either in the original form in which information is conveyed to the brain, or in the marvelously metamorphosed form in which they then proceed to the hand? By bone conduction, we already introduce sounds into the nerve channels of the deaf in order that they may hear. Is it not possible that we may learn to introduce them without the present cumbersomeness of first transforming electrical vibrations to mechanical ones, which the human mechanism promptly transforms back to the electrical form? With a couple of electrodes on the skull, the encephalograph now produces pen and ink traces, which bear some relation to the electrical phenomena going on in the brain itself. True, the record is unintelligible, except as it points out certain gross misfunctioning of the cerebral mechanism. But who would now place bounds on where such a thing may lead? In the outside world, all forms of intelligence, whether of sound or sight, have been reduced to the form of varying currents in an electrical circuit in order that they may be transmitted. Inside the human frame, exactly the same sort of process occurs. Must we always transform to mechanical movements in order to proceed from one electrical phenomenon to another? It is a suggestive thought, but it hardly warrants prediction without losing touch with reality and immediateness. Presumably, man's spirit should be elevated if he can better review his shady past and analyze more completely and objectively his present problems. He has built a civilization so complex that he needs to mechanize his record more fully if he is to push his experiment to its logical conclusion and not merely become bogged down partway there by overtaxing his limited memory. His excursion may be more enjoyable if he can reacquire the privilege of forgetting the manifold things he does not need to have immediately at hand, with some assurance that he can find them again if they prove important. The applications of science have built man a well-supplied house and are teaching him to live healthily therein. They have enabled him to throw masses of people against one another with cruel weapons. They may yet allow him truly to encompass the great record and to grow in the wisdom of race experience. He may perish in conflict before he learns to wield that record for his true good. Yet, in the application of science to the needs and desires of man, it would seem to be a singularly unfortunate stage at which to terminate the process, or to lose hope as to the outcome. End quote. Comments related to Bush's article. There are many significant items in the article, but the main ones upon which we shall comment here will be those relative to the use and implications of his memex. The associative trails, whose establishment and use within the files he describes at some length, provide a beautiful example of a new capability in symbol structuring that derives from new artifact process capability, and that provides new ways to develop and portray concept structures. Any file is a symbol structure whose purpose is to represent a variety of concepts and concept structures in a way that makes them maximally available and useful to the needs of the human's mental structure development, within the limits imposed by the capability of the artifacts and human for jointly executing processes of symbol structure manipulation. The memex allows a human user to do more conveniently, less energy, more quickly, what he could have done with relatively ordinary photographic equipment and filing systems, but he would have had to spend so much time in the lower-level processes of manipulation that his mental time constants of memory and patience would have rendered the system unusable in the detailed and intimate sense which Bush illustrates. The memex adds a factor of speed and convenience to ordinary filing system, symbol structuring, processes that would encourage new methods of work by the user. And it also adds speed and convenience for processes not generally used before, making it easy to establish and follow the associative trails. Makes practical a new symbol structuring process whose use can make a significant difference in the concept structuring and basic methods of work. It is also probable that clever usage of associative trail manipulation can augment the human's process structuring and executing capabilities so that he could successfully make use of even more powerful symbol structure manipulation processes utilizing the memex capabilities. An example of this general sort of thing was given by Bush, where he points out that the file index can be called to view at the push of a button, which implicitly provides greater capability to work within more sophisticated and complex indexing systems. Note, too, the implications extending from Bush's mention of one user duplicating a trail, a portion of his structure, and giving it to a friend who can put it into his memex and integrate it into his own trail structure. Also note the wholly new forms of encyclopedia, the profession of trailblazers, and the inheritance from a master, including the entire scaffolding by which such additions to the world's record were erected. These illustrate the types of changes in the ways in which people can cooperate intellectually that can emerge from the augmentation of the individuals. This type of change represents a very significant part of the potential value in putting research directly on the means for making individuals intellectually more effective.